Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today we're going to take a bit of a different approach to business and talk about the business of creating documentaries. My guest, Emmanuel Etier, is here to share humanitarian filmmaking, making peace one documentary at a time. And once you hear the list of the work that he's done, I'm pretty sure you're going to go, oh, I have seen that, or better yet, I'm going to go see that. Emmanuel is an experienced feature film producer, and he has directed several pictures before completing in 2002 the peace documentary The Invocation, which was narrated by Sharon Stone and starred Desmond Tutu, the Dalai Lama, Deepak Chopra, as well as many other worldwide peace activists. And today he is here to share how he made that first documentary, what came next, promotion and distribution, what's going on now and in the next few years, and so much more, time permitting. Emmanuel, good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I am so excited to have you here.
Good morning, everybody. So happy to be bright and early and about to share everything I've done so far, and hopefully that will wake up and inspire other people as well.
Oh, it definitely will. Listen, before we get rocking and rolling here, is there anything that you want people to know about yourself before we kind of launch into the topics that you're here to share?
No, absolutely nothing more than you already said. I think anything more can be found on the net. You just type my name on Google, Emmanuel Etier, Itier, and you will see who I am, what I do, how I do it. So it will hopefully complement what I'm going to talk about this morning. But yeah, we are ready, steady, and we can go.
Let's go. Listen, I have been looking at all the different documentaries that you have done, and I had heard of a couple of them, and I'm definitely doing my best to find them and watch them. What prompted you? I mean, you have a long career in, you know, filmmaking, and I believe you're an artist as well as a poet, I believe. How did you come to make that first documentary? It's an interesting topic. I mean, what kind of impelled you down that lane?
Well, I think like everything in life, it's about trying to figure out who truly you are, the authentic self, and what you can do about yourself in this crazy, weird, very bizarrely constructive existence, life, you know. It's really hard to fit in. And I think that's the first step, and that's how it starts. It's always about trying to understand who you are. And for me, I was a 15-year-old boy living in Nice. My dad was a surgeon and then a radiologist. My mom was a teacher. And for some reason, even so, they, you know, the instinct of parents is to push the kids in the same direction that they have. It's a little bit the construct of society to try to push you in a direction and make you who they think you are. But you might not be that. You might be that, but you might not be that. So it's about trying to realize who you are. And it can start, like me, at 15. It can start at 18. It can start. There is no age to start living your life, you know. But what I mean is it's really important to realize your existence, your own existence, and not the existence that people is trying to make of you, that society is trying to make of you. And again, you know, I'm somebody that always going to question the way society is brainwashing you, manipulating us, forcing us to believe this or that, to belong to this party or that party, to that race or that race, that religion. And at the end, you realize it's not you. And so I was lucky. In spite of having a family that was trying to push me in a direction, very early, I realized, and that happened after I went to the Cannes Film Festival, that what I thought I was a filmmaker, a storyteller. Because these movies that I was watching had such a profound effect, to the point where one day when I was in a class of math, as I was looking at the teacher explaining a geometry problem, my brain analyzed that and turned it into a poem. So here I am, you know, 15-year-old. I'm in a class surrounded by regular folks, and I'm starting to write a poem. And I got a little bit scared by myself. I'm like, what type of nut are you? What are you doing? This is a class of math, and you're writing poetry? And I did not even like poetry. So I'm angry. This is insane. I'm insane. And, you know, again, you are what you are, you are. So you go along with your day, and you're like, you know, I went back home that night, and I look at that poem where it scratched these, I don't know, 20 or 30 lines that were very comprehensive, very simple. They were all about, actually, they were about questioning. The poem was called La Cage, which means the cage, and I guess I felt like a bird in a cage at that time, or a lion in a cage, more exactly. I think I'm more of a lion in a cage. But it was questioning, you know, who am I? What am I? It's exactly this basic question that all of us are asking sometime almost every day, because we question things, and I think it's healthy. That's how we move forward. So anyway, to move along with the story.
I agree. I think I just... Yeah, I've started questioning practically everything right about the same age. I mean, I was always very interested in why people did things, why I did things, but right about that time, around 15, I decided that what I was being taught really was just kind of scratching the surface. And a lot of what I was being taught I didn't like. I didn't like it at all. So I began questioning authority, if you will, very, very young. Mm-hmm. And I do it to this day. And I really wish
healthy.
That more people would just not... I do, too. I wish that more people would just say, hey, hang on a second. You know,
I
understand
taught,
this is...
We're taught not to question. Yeah, it's sad. We're taught not to question. And worse, we are taught to fear the others, to fear God, to fear the establishment, to fear the president. But why? Really? Are they that almighty and powerful that, A, we need to fear, and secondly, that they're going to hurt us? I mean, it doesn't make sense. So anyway, not making sense at all of myself and of life at that time, I had a dream that night, and it's interesting. I dreamt the poem in a visual construct. I really saw a short movie. And that movie was so obsessive in my mind that in the morning I told my friend at school, I was a little bit of a weird bird. I was spending most of my time in movie theater and doing a surfboarding and flirting with girls, you know, what typical teenagers, male, are doing. You know, that means not paying that much attention to what they should pay attention to. But anyway, so I had a few friends and I said, hey, you know, I don't know, guys. I think my call is doing movies, and, you know, I had this dream based on this poem, and they're like, oh, my God, this is insane, but that's kind of cool. Do you want to do it? And I'm like, yeah, let's do it. And so within a week, I had assembled a crew with zero budget. I had found big, heavy video camera, because these were the 80s. I think it was 83 or 84. And so it was the beginning of filming on video with this big monster camera that was almost as big as I was, and we shot the first shot that I directed, which was called The Cage, and it was a story about, you know, a dude trying to figure out his life, watching Pink Floyd The Wall with music from Peter Gabriel put on 45. You know, remember we had vinyls, 33 and 45. So I was listening to the Peter Gabriel soundtrack of a movie called Birdie, which is really the movie that had the most influence on me, with Nicolas Cage and Matthew Modine, directed by Alan Parker. And I decided I was going to speed up that music, and it became very eerie. And so I did that little short, 3 minutes, and I showed it to my parents. And they were half horrified and half very intrigued. And they said, listen, you know, at that time, I think I was like 2 years from completing high school. And they said, you know, complete high school, and then we will help you. We'll see, you know, we would love for you to do medical school, but if you don't want to go to medical school, maybe film school. So that was it. You know, you opened the door to me to a possibility, and I exploded the door and rushed into it, through it, and went to the other side, and I never came back. So obviously I never went to medical school, and I never went to film school either, because I was such a punk that my mind, again, was so wandering and so gluttonous to absorb everything and explore everything and all, that I kept going. So I was living at the time in Nice, and I moved to Paris because that's where, you know, most of the of everything happened in the entertainment industry. And then by some fluke, I came to visit the U.S., met a woman on a plane who was a flight attendant, ended up marrying her. What are the odds? That's crazy. And I ended up here. I ended up in the U.S. in 1988, not speaking a word of English, just barely having graduated from high school, not a penny in my pocket other than a few dollars that my parents were giving me every month to just basically survive, and really basically that my budget with my wife was like $5 or $7 a day, so it was tight. But you know, I kept going, and I kept dreaming, and I kept working, and I think that's a lesson I learned. The first lesson I learned from life is that you need to balance between the dream and the reality. The dream is what keeps you hoping, going, excelling, becoming, you know. And the reality, it's that material world we live in, where you have to pay your basic bills to eat and have a roof and so exist on that material sense. So you need the spiritual world in the sense of the dream world, and by the way, spiritual come from spiritu, which means the breath. So really I want to debunk, you know, the fear of that word, spirituality, because people always are, a lot of them are scared, and I was scared of that word when I heard it the first time, because I didn't know what it was, and because I was such a punk, I was anti-spiritual and anti-religion and anti-this and that, without knowing what these words mean. So I looked into them, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I can love the word spiritual, because after all, it means the breath, the original breath. So, yeah, of course we need to breathe. And so you need that. You need your breath, your original breath that keeps you going and alive. And you need, you know, the material world, because that's what you are. You're this weird assemble of molecules that's fighting and debating into a materialistic world. So that's why. One dimension and one reality you can't erase and can ignore. And if you do, you're going to run into a wall. So I started to work, taking all type of jobs, you know, from French teachers to food manager to waiter, anything, you know, and plus learning language. Imagine that at first, you know, people would tell me to go left, I was going right, to go up, I was going down, because I didn't even understand what people were saying. So it took some time, you know, it took 2 years. And then during that period of 2 years, obviously, I started to figure out how to meet people in that business that was so attractive to me, the movie business. And at the time, now we are in 1988, there were barely no internet, no cell phones, nothing. The communication was insane. You know, I was in my car. I remember one time I was walking. I was lucky. One of my first jobs was delivering packages for a big talent agency, CAA. I was in the mailing room, as they say. and then the agent training program, and I was delivering packages, but at some time I would look every day at little ads, and if there were any ads for being an assistant or production assistant or director assistant in the movie business. And if I found one, I would have to stop on the side of the road, find a phone booth, make my call with 25 cents or 10 cents, whatever it was at the time, and reach out to that person and eventually set up a meeting and then go. And I mean, it was really interesting, the process of looking for a job. It was not like today where you just click, 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 and you're connected, or you call somebody on your cell and it's all good, or FaceTime. So it was very, very challenging. But anyway, to jump now to how I made The Invocation, which was my first what I call humanitarian documentary, well, you have to jump 20 years in the future, or back into the future. And basically, through that time, I managed to meet people, and again, a mix of luck, mix of pushing and willing and dealing, and I ended up starting to direct movies and finding money and people who had money and who wanted to invest in movies. To the point where in the 90s, late 90s, early 2000, 2002 or 3, I was doing a bunch of small horror, action, erotic features for Showtimes, Lionsgate, Home Video, small independents and everything. And I was on one side very happy, and on the other side not happy, meaning that the materialistic world was kind of coming together for me. I was starting to be able to survive in that business I dreamt to be part of. But my spiritual side was a little bit frustrated because what I was creating, the content, was really lame and boring and kind of stupid, let's be honest. And, you know, and there is a stupid side of myself, like everybody. Nobody's perfect, but, you know, the genius side of myself was a little bit irritated. And I'm like, you're better than that. You can do better, you know. And, again, I question things. I'm like, nah, I'm not happy enough, you know. There is more. And I thought, well, what can you do? You're a filmmaker now. You're telling stories. But you have that inspiration. You have that God complex, but in the good sense of the term, more like the Christ complex, let's be humble, meaning that you want to help others. And I really discovered that I really loved everybody. Like, again, that I didn't belong anywhere, but I belong everywhere, meaning that I can be with atheists and I'm happy. I can be with Christian and I'm happy. I can be with people of that color, I'm happy. Of that language, culture, and I don't see, even so I've got that silly French accent, which people tell me I still have. And by the way, I don't even hear it this morning. So I never hear it anymore. It takes my kids to make fun of me. So that's hilarious. So it's funny how as I left France, and so I kind of disconnected myself from that little French dude, you know, that little French bulldog, the bulldog disappeared. It became this universal citizen of the world. And to this day, all my movies are shot all over the world, by the way. Anywhere I go, I feel I'm them, you know, and they are me. It's like weird. I always say I am because we are, but it's true. I really think, and by the way, quantum physics proves that, it proves that on a molecular level, we are all a big assemble of molecules interacting and intertwined. And that's why, you know, the notion of the law of attraction and the domino effect, well, to a certain extent, it is true, because obviously, if I'm doing good here, well, obviously, my molecules are in action. They are acting on your molecule, who are going to be activated, and on and on and on. So what goes around comes around. And therefore, yes, the notion of karma and all these big words, it's kind of a little bit true, in the sense where we are part of a big assemble. We are the divine, if you want to even go further in the speculation of a debate about what God could be, you know, because again, we have no idea, and it's not explained in any scripture. It just says God is all and all is God. So it's an assemble. That's it. It's a construct. And everything is viable, and the debate should be open, because physics has its limits still. We just know that indeed we are together. We are one. But how does that work? What is the impact between what we see and we don't see? We don't know. We can believe, we can speculate, but we don't know. So anyway, I thought, wow, you have all these ideas, you know. Maybe you could put them in a movie. So at first, it's interesting. I try to articulate a very constructed dialogue and trying to find script or even write script who will explain my vision of the world, which is probably the vision of the world, because again, I'm just part of the world. So I'm just an element that's trying to fit in and vice versa. And the world is trying to fit me in. And it didn't come together. But then I discovered the world of documentaries. And I thought, oh, wow, look, you know, if you do a doc, this is your political platform in the sense of politics for the people. So again, beyond parties and ideology and everything, something truly for the people, for we the people. And I'm like, well, why don't you do a documentary? And I'm like, yeah, okay, Manuel, yeah, that's a good idea, okay. And then the second thing that comes to your mind is like, yeah, but what subject? What do I take? Do I study ants? Do I study penguins? Do I study this guy cutting sushi? I don't know, you know. So I remember clearly, I live in Santa Barbara now, and I was going back and forth always, as I do always, in my little car, listening to some punk music, the Ramones, Out of Anything, and I was boiling, and it was boiling, and I'm like, okay, now you know what your next phase is. You're going to do documentaries that have a real impact, something that's going to awaken people and maybe hopefully a little bit unite them even more and make them understand how complementary they are to each other, and they are not in competition. They should work together beyond, again, race, religion, political parties and all that. So what's your subject, Emmanuel? What's your subject? And I'm boring, and suddenly I look up into the universe up above, and I yell out of frustration, out of stupidity, like we usually yell. And I swore at the heaven. I said the four-letter word, and immediately I got it. I'm like, this is your problem, Emmanuel. You're not a believer in the sense of truly. You know, it's interesting. The word faith, having faith, comes from a Latin verb, which is fidere, which means to trust. And I think that was my problem. I didn't trust truly anybody, including myself. I didn't have faith. So I was kind of lost. And so the study of God, because that's exactly that came to realization, was the first subject I should film, because that will hopefully solutionize a lot of things in my life, including what comes next. So I am coming back home at night and telling my wife, so I found the subject of my first documentary. It's going to be God. And she laughed. She's like, but you're insane. You don't even believe in God. And I said, exactly. That's why I'm perfect. You know, I always invite people to embark on something they don't know about, they don't believe in, because it's going to re-evolutionize themselves. It's going to totally awaken a whole world of possibilities. Sorry, discoveries. It's going to be an amazing adventure that's going to truly make you the man or the woman you truly want to be. So again, it's that leap of faith, and I took it, the leap of trust. And I took it, and I started to, you know, now we are 2008, something like this. So we do have the internet, and we do have a world of connection we didn't have way back. And I started to inquire into that world, you know, God. What is God anyway? Well, first, I found that God came from a verb, the word God, you know, not God. We have no idea what is God, but at least the word God came from a Pan-Germano verb, which means to invoke. So I thought, oh, wow, that makes sense. The little I know about, you know, what I read when I was
I didn't know
young.
That.
Yeah.
Can
nobody
you repeat
knows
that?
That because
I think
we
that's important.
It's super important, and because we don't question enough. We just accept the word God.
Right.
Accept God and shut up, basically, we are told. And they, well, no, you can accept God, but you don't need to shut up. You can talk and try to understand what the word means. And it makes sense. The notion of invoking is a notion of really awakening, of existing, of of becoming. And so if anything, again, remember in the little we know of the scripture, like I was raised in a weird family, half Protestant, half Catholic. Then we found out that we had Jewish roots, you know, then I married a woman who was from originally Muslim and Zoroastrianist. So I was mixed all over the world of religion. And that's why at the end I was kind of not disgusted, but I was like, this is boring. All these people fighting all the time for what I think makes no sense. But I went back, and as soon as I found out that God was a very interesting word, I said, okay, I want to know more. And then I went back and read the Bible again, and I'm like, oh, okay, God is all is God. And then when Abraham asked God, supposedly, because, you know, again, these are scriptures that were written over 300 years after, supposedly, the death of Jesus Christ. I mean, there's a lot of supposition, a lot of unproved, a lot of maybe fake news, like that all the crazy man is saying all the time. But let's assume that, indeed, there is a base on this story. What God supposedly said to Abraham is, tell them that I am what I am, I am. So now I understand, okay, I'm doing a documentary about God, and it's really about existence. It's about being, about becoming into becoming or becoming into being. And that's exactly the route I took. I took a very open route, open journey into God through religion, because that's the basis, that's a blueprint. And then I went beyond. I went to spirituality, which is a religion a bit more open, and then to science, which is spirituality trying to be explained. So we constructed, and I say we because I feel that all of my documentaries, and I think that if filmmakers are honest when they do documentaries, it's not totally their movie, it's our movie. You know, it's a movie of all the people you meet along the journey who feed you with so many information that you think it's your vision and your information, but it's not. It's our information, it's our vision. And that was the point of the movie. It was to show that God is all and all is God. So we are definitely part of this huge assemble, and we don't really know how it works, but it seemed to work when we indeed engage with each other in a healthy relation, and which was the second key word. I wanted to recreate relation, bridges of communication, dialogue between people, because for me it's very important, because most of the time when I see failure, like right now a government shutdown, to be very specific and clear, it's all about the failure of relationship. It's how we gave up on everybody, on each other, and how now we are in this state of animosity and war. But for what? Really? Does that make sense? No. And really, you don't want to compromise?
I agree with you. It's bizarre.
You don't want to compromise? Why don't you want to compromise? Really? It's your way or the highway? Really? But that's how we end up killing each other. You have to understand that as soon as you say it's my way or the highway, you pronounce a fatal act of killing. It's the same. It starts with a mental act of killing, and eventually you do it physically. So it's very dangerous. Again, remember, we're all part of the big assemble. We're all the customers of each other. We're all the healer or the killer of each other. So you have to be very careful and sensitive, and more important, responsible. And the reason why is because eventually it affects you. Don't you think that, again, what goes around doesn't come around? Yes, of course, what goes around comes around. So if you spread harm and hate and disconnection and violence, you're going to get that in your face sooner than later. So is it really what you want? I don't think so.
To that point, you don't even have to physically do it. You don't have to physically threaten someone or go out and key their car or call them ugly words in public. Even doing it mentally, I believe, is harmful to your psyche.
Of course.
So I catch myself a lot of times going, back it up, Denise, shut up. You know, rethink that. Come up with a different thought. Course correct right now.
Exactly. It's very easy. You know, you stop, and right now, everybody, do that exercise. You tell yourself in your mind the four-letter word and see how it affects you. Does that make you happy? No, it puts you down. This word puts you down. And then you use the same letter, but the L-O-V-E letter, the love letter. Wow, do you see that energy that comes in suddenly? Yeah, isn't that beautiful?
Exactly.
So what, you're going to choose that energy or the other one that makes you feel like crap? It's common sense, but that's the thing, is that we have lost so much common sense in our society. We have surrendered our beautiful, gorgeous, intelligent, and genius to the monstrous system of consumerism and fascist totalitarianism, and that's enough. It's time to rebel, but you don't need to rebel in a violent way, taking weapons. You need to rebel with your mind. You know, I always say our challenge this century is to free the mind. We have to break down the mind jail, and we are still in jail. Oh, I'm a Christian. Oh, I'm a Jew. Oh, I'm black. Oh, I'm white. You know, we're like the victims, and we're in that jail, and we love that jail. Excuse me, I was going to swear on the air, but really, really, that's what you want? I don't think so.
I was right there with you. Go ahead and say it.
Exactly. No, but you don't need that. Even pronouncing that word, you don't need that. You say, no, I love myself and I love you. And that's it. And right there, boom, the mind jail dissolved. You're free, and now we can walk, and we can talk, and we can build, and we can explore together.
Right.
And there is no limitation. And that's what I wanted to do with these documentaries, because after all, it's how I ended up doing that. And that's how I did it. I just liberated myself. I said, you know what? The heck with my bills, and the heck with my bankruptcy, and because I was on the verge, and guess what? I went through bankruptcy, and who cares? You know, these are all just materialistic, stupid tools to keep going, actually. You know, bankruptcy liberates you. It gets rid of your debt. After that, obviously, you're in a dear position where you cannot have credit for a while, but you can live without credit. You know, you just take two extra jobs and make the same amount of money and keep going. So anyway, that's how the first documentary was born, with that saying I love you to everybody, even so I was the little French bulldog punk that had done only horror movies, and I was going to talk to Deepak Chopra and Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama and Sean Stone and telling them, no, that guy exists. Yeah, the guy, the French guy that you listen to who did all this horror crap. Yeah, sure, he exists. But now look at this guy. You know, this guy is telling you, I love you, and I want to do a movie on God. And everybody followed. I mean, it was incredible, you know. I even instantly got a line of credit for like around $100,000 from various credit cards and friends. And so virtually, boom, I was on my way, and I did it. You know, within a year, I'd gone around the world from South Africa to India to Latin America, Europe, and we had filmed everywhere. We had found along the way a distributor, because that's where I'm going to go next. It's what do you do when the movie is finished. And we had done our first movie called The Invocation, which is really the word, the invocation behind the word God. And so it was born. And after that, the difficulty for a filmmaker is to figure out what do I do with that creation. And it's very tough. You know, I found out very roughly that there is, and to this day it's still limited, there isn't too many avenues for what is considered a spiritual movie. And again, remember, the word spiritual is going to scare everybody, and it still scares everybody. So many people in Hollywood are scared when you say, hey, I'm doing spiritual documentaries. That's why today I say I'm doing humanitarian documentary. I'm making it a little bit easier to them and less scary. But obviously it's the same. It's a humanitarian documentary is a spiritual documentary. So there aren't too many ways to distribute that. I mean, today we have obviously an abundance of possibilities with a digital world. But if you do that, if you self-distribute through your own platform or a few independent platforms or even using Amazon Prime, the problem is that your product, your content, your creation get lost in an ocean of other content that is widely promoted and marketed by big corporations. So, and that's what happened to The Invocation. The Invocation really kind of was alive, but sometimes dead, in the sense where it was alive. I was going from festival to festival. I got multiple awards. But it was dead in the physical sense of providing a revenue and therefore becoming a sustainable business plan for me to keep going. It was all over the internet, but people didn't really know about it. Doing festival is not enough. Therefore, people didn't click on it. And also, again, remember, we are kind of brainwashed and manipulated by a society that still tell you what to consume and not to consume. Again, we don't question enough. And I didn't have Oprah telling about my movie, or Johnson apparently wasn't enough, even so she was saying the movie was brilliant. So people didn't buy it. And it kind of died. It died to the point where actually even the digital distribution stopped. I think we ended up only on Gaia and FMTV, which are two platforms that are taking a chance on spiritual movies, but they give you peanuts or anything, sometimes nothing. So it stopped because the interest died. People thought, just another boring movie on God. And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. Another boring movie on God. That's a good one, you know, as if God can be boring. But anyway, that's another debate.
Somebody actually said that? They used that phrase?
Yeah,
another boring movie on God? Oh, my.
Yeah. You're just a crazy Frenchman doing a boring movie on God. I think that was the entire. Then another one said, oh, yeah, your movie is too small. It's not for us. Like a big film festival turned me down saying, yeah, your movie is too small. It's not for us. And I, I guess God is too small for you. And Sharon Stone, the Dalai Lama, Desmond Tutu, Deepak Chopra, Michael Beckwith, Oliver Stone, Mark Wahlberg, and on and on. Yeah, these people are too small for you. And you know what? I even said, well, let me pause for a second. I think you're in between your leg is too small. That's the real problem. Because, you know, when you attack me, I become ferocious. I don't take it. You know, I'm a very kind man, but you push me, and I'm going to fight back. I'm going to claw you back. Because, you know, sometimes if my love doesn't work, I'm sorry, a big slap maybe is going to wake you up. So, that's where the punk is. He's still there. The bulldog is still there. I always
Good.
Say I'm a holy punk.
Glad to hear
I'm a holy
it.
Punk. You can get all the love you want from me, but if you abuse of me, I'm not going to let be happen. You know, I'm going to fight back, and I think there is nothing wrong about that. I think actually that's what's going on right now. Again, there is not enough fighting back smartly, first with love, and if love is not enough, well, a little slap has never hurt anybody. Again, you need to control your violence and not making totally destructive, even so obviously this is not the way you want to engage, because I agree, again, it has an impact on yourself and on everybody. And, you know, once you get a test for blood, who knows, you might turn into a vampire. So you have to be very careful. We are very, very, very fragile creatures who can snap and go crazy very easily. So it's again, every time, repeat yourself, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, and that includes you and everybody else around. I love we should maybe say, because the we include the I. So this way you get it all.
I love that.
And so, yeah. So, but anyway, to, again, keep going with the story. And it's our story. It's not only the story of Emmanuel. Emmanuel is just part of the story. That's it. He's just the storyteller of this morning. But I really feel it's not my story. It's a story that includes my wife, my kids, my friend, all the speakers in the movie, you now. So, again, it's a dance we are conducting together and we are leading together. But anyway, when I did the invocation, I realized that, you know, maybe money, religion, race wasn't truly the real cause and the real problem that we are having in our society, that failure of relationship I was explaining earlier. I think that what I discovered, and I discovered it very organically, I had the instinct to go and interview a lot of women in this movie, in the movie about God, because I was, again, my instinct, well, hey, I'm French, so I love women. That's like a construct I can, a manipulation, a brainwash I can escape from, and I'm very glad about that. So I love all women, and so I decided to interview women for the God movie, but also because, you know, when I was reading about religion and the scriptures, you know, whether it's the Bible, the Torah, the Quran, the teaching of Buddha, it's all about men, mainly. You know, women are just a sidekick, you know, if that much. So I'm like, there is probably something wrong, because indeed people are have the impression God is a he and it's the father, and it's, but where is the mother and where is the she? That doesn't make too much sense to me, because after all, how do we create life? You and I, right? A man and a woman. So I'm like, if anything, God is a it, or he has no gender, or he has all the gender, whatever, you know, or maybe God is us, you know, and vice versa. So anyway, I went and I interviewed a lot of women, you know, the Marianne Williamson and the Jean Houston and the Barbara Maxwell and on, Vandana Shiva, da-da-dee-da-da-da. Amazing. Oh, my God. For a guy, like a macho idiot like me, to listen to women for once instead of trying to articulate an unhealthy relationship where I was more of a consumer than a listener. Wow. Here we go. Another world open. And I'm like, well, you know, maybe the problem we have on this planet, it's this ultra... for me, it feels like we are the victim of this ultra construct, of this ultra patriarchal, macho, dominant, killing system, where basically the man is, again, put on a pedestal, making him think he's the god. And actually, again, all the representation of God are men, manly. Even so, way back in the cave, and the cavemen age, the goddess were the representation of God were goddesses, were women, were female, but that disappeared with all the monotheist religion, you know, who gave again the impression, and especially with the Catholic Church, who started to paint and ask painter to paint God, and God, remember that big drawing of the finger of God touching the finger of man, and God was what? A man. So guess what? You put a psychological fracture in the mind of a society that suddenly surrendered to the notion that we guys are in charge and you women should be under us. Again, I was going to swear on air, but I cannot accept that. This is ridiculous. But anyway, to go back to filmmaking, I said, you know, maybe that's my subject, the next one, and you're the perfect creature to do that, because you are a macho idiot and you've been raised as that Superman complexed idiot. So you're going to now do a movie only with women called Femme, Women Healing the World. And that's your job, Emmanuel. You're going to try to explain that we need to rebalance the feminine and the masculine on the spiritual level, on the physical level, in the city hall, in the government, in the churches, everywhere. And that's until we have a complete balance of that, we won't be able to function, because basically we are denying half of our existence. And it's true, because in the belly of our mothers, we don't have a sex for 3 months. For 3 months, we are it. Okay, and then there is a separation between male and female, and sometimes, obviously, that's probably how you can explain, you know, other gender and homosexuality and whatever. There isn't totally a separation, or there is a separation that might be spiritual but not physically, and vice versa. So that means we embody the feminine and the masculine all our life, and it's fine. That's the yin and the yang. That's a balance of the universal energies. And so that became the subject of my next movie. I did for 2 years or 3 years around the world again, a beautiful movie exploring that notion of balance between the feminine and the masculine, and it became Femme, Women Healing the World. And now we are jumping to 2013.
Right. Now, this was one that you also did with Sharon Stone.
So the little story for Sharon Stone is funny. There is always a story behind everything. Let's be honest. We are a story in perpetual evolution. So with Sharon Stone, it was funny. You remember when I was swearing at the universe, when I was driving my little car, mm-hmm. listening to the Ramones, and the vision of the invocation came to be? Well, guess what? That, again, the punk in me. The voice I heard for God in my crazy head was the voice of Sharon Stone. I had like a Joan of Arc moment where, well, not only are you going to make a movie about God, but it's going to be narrated by Sharon Stone because she's God. And I laugh, and I'm like, you're really insane. Sharon Stone is God. Well, A, I you know, now that I know her, she's a goddess. I agree. But that's another debate again. But anyway, I thought that it was beautiful because indeed, because of what I just said 5 minutes ago, that the representation of God are always masculine, I thought, hey, that's a nice slap on religion, you know, taking the voice of Sharon Stone, being the God, the narrator. And guess what? It worked out. So I was very lucky at the time. I had many friends. I still have many friends. And one of them, Nathalie Dubois, was working with her and her partner. And she put me in touch with the partner. To make it short, for a year, nothing happened. Sharon and her partner went separate ways. And anyway, it went nowhere. But there was a communication, a connection that had been made. And because of that, I was sending to an address the project in progress, the cut of the movie. You know, again, at that time, it was 2009. So the internet wasn't that solid to carry large files. So I had to burn DVDs and then send them to her. Oh, I thought it was her, you know, because obviously I was going through the partner I talked once. But anyway, we jump a little more. And for a year, I hear back from our assistant that she's not really interested to move forward, but she finds your project intriguing, and she invites you to keep going and keep her informed. So I'm like, oh, God, but yeah, man, I really want you. And you know, at one point, I even tried some other people, and it didn't work. It wasn't the right voice, you know, it didn't click. So anyway, one day, I just interviewed another name, Rabbi David Wolpe, who is a big rabbi in Los Angeles at Sinai Temple. And he told me that he was going to have a big debate with a huge atheist writer, Hutchinson, Mr. Hutchinson, at some location in Los Angeles. And that night I was on my way to Vancouver because I'm on the side, the bread and butter in me forced me to accept other assignment, and I was going to do some interviews, I think out of anybody, the Spice Girls, I think, in Vancouver. You see how crazy life is? One day I deal with God, the other day with the Spice Girls. But so anyway, I remember I thought, okay, maybe I can squeeze in and go see that debate because I would like to have Mitchell and Chilson in my movie, and I can listen to the debate because it's super interesting listening to a super religious man versus a super atheist man, you know, one saying God is alive and the other one saying God is dead, which again, life and death, as we know, is connected. So it's still a continuation of existence in a different molecular form. So you're both right. God is alive and dead all the time. But again, that's another debate, maybe another documentary. So I go to that debate, and guess what? I sit down and I freaked out because as I sat down, who comes and sit down right in front of me? What are the odds? Sharon Stone. And I'm like, no way.
I was going to say it has to be her. Oh.
And I'm like, no way. Again, what the heck is going on? Is there like a camera? Is there a God? You know, you start questioning things. That's good. Again, see how good it is to question things? And so anyway, I'm like, you know, the debate hasn't started, so I thought, okay, I'm going to jump on her, introduce myself, have a two-minute conversation, and then I can go to the airport. As I was trying to find the faith, the trust, the force in me to do that, you know, it's like imagine a little 15-year-old that I was looking at a beautiful goddess and saying, hey, you want to go out with me? Basically, I was the same, paralyzed, couldn't move. I was like sweating, and, you know, my palm was anyway. So I froze. And as I froze, the debate started. So here I am again stuck. And I'm like, no, you have to stay. And so the debate started. It was supposed to be an hour, and it ended up being an hour and a half. Well, guess what? Losing that half an hour was starting to be a big problem. because I had a plane to catch, and the window was closing on me. But I'm like, hey, what is more important, missing your plane? Well, it's like $500, you know. That's a good chunk of the food budget, or meeting Sharon Stone. And I'm like, you still have a chance to make it. You still have a chance to make it. So I waited, make it short. Eventually, everything worked out. The light turned on. I talked to her two minutes. She said she had heard of my movie. She knew who I was. And she gave me a personal card with a personal email. So, bang, suddenly I was connected to the goddess. And within another 6 months, she agreed. She said, you know, after 6 months of hard working, crafting, re-editing, adding new people, removing some, she said, your movie is amazing. It's perfect. I'd be honored to do the narration, to be your partner. And it's like, I was on my knees. I'm like, okay, well, that's it. You know, I'm having an orgasm. This is insane. This is absolutely insane. I was having a spiritual orgasm. And that was it, you know. And we've been working together for now 10 years. And she's done great with other documentaries and other things on her side. And, you know, and I've done other things on my side as well. But from time to time, we connect. We feel that there is really an exchange, a pure spiritual, intellectual exchange that help bring another dimension to these movies, you know, and we've done four. So The Invocation was the first one. In Femme, Women Healing the World, she accepted to be also interviewed, which was the other thing I had in mind. I wanted the second movie, actually, it was interesting for Femme. I wanted a male narrator because it was only women on the screen. It was edited by women. So I wanted eventually a little bit of more of the director being a male. I wanted the narrator to be a male. And I remember I approached Richard Gere and other people, and they were either declining or evasive. Bottom line, there is a necessity as an artist to eventually be done with your work and bring it forth to the festival and the market and the people. And so I thought, you know what? It seems like the movie itself doesn't want any other man than me. So, and my, by the way, my great director of photography, Claude Budin, that I salute this morning, because without him, again, I'm an imbecile. You know, he's the one that makes. It's very simple. I always tell, hey, why did Claude shoot everything in your movies? I'm like, no. The good shot, it's him. The bad shot, it's me. So it's very simple. Every time you have a beauty shot, it's him. Every time you are a little bit out of focus, a little bit underlit, it's me, because I'm not a director of photography. But sometimes, because I didn't have the budget, I had to do the interviews myself. But for Sharon Stone, I had Claude, so it was a beautiful shot in the house of my friend and producer Barbara Lazaroff in Los Angeles, and it was splendid. So anyway, after we finished Femme, I told Sharon, you know, I'm going to keep going. And she's like, oh, that guy is nuts. He's possessed, you know. I say, okay, well, you have my blessing, you know. And that's how we work. She's, you know, now she's a producer on all the movie. And the way we work is I go and do the things. And then I come and I show her. And a lot of times she says, oh, you know, this is okay. This is not okay. This could be better. You forgot this. And it's great because I feel that, you know, I'm the mad painter, but, you know, I need a curator. I need somebody that on my side can have a voice and show me what is not necessarily great. Not that anything is perfect, but maybe a little bit better, a bit more accessible, a bit better constructed. Because again, I am somewhere French. I'm very like lost in my thoughts. You know, the French are the land of the I think, therefore I am. But we never finish the sentence by therefore I do. And in America, it's too much of I do without the I think, therefore I am. So I try to balance, and I show again how we are complemented between culture, society, countries, where we have system of thoughts and system of action that should be complementary, because some of us got stuck into our thoughts and some of us got stuck into our actions, and you need both thinking and doing. You know, that's how you are, the mix and the balance of that. You cannot just exist meditating and praying in your cave. You have to eventually put that in action, or nothing happened. Trust me, nothing happened. You're going to do that for 1,000 years and nothing happened. Even worse, what's going to happen is you give yourself the impression something is happening, but nothing is happening. So it's not good enough. You know, you need to put your thoughts and your prayer into action. And that's God, by the way, you know. Made the world in 6 days and slept on the seven. Well, you have to work first, and then you can meditate and sleep and pray. It's actually probably, well, it's not the reverse. It's a continuation of the cycle, from one thought to an action to a thought to an action. Anyway, I just went onto a tangent again. So at the end, I told Sharon I was going to keep going. And now, we are now in 2014 or 15, so that's 3 years ago. And for the last 3 years, I've done two more documentaries. This time I found out I could be a bit more efficient. You know, technology is amazing. Also, I realized that when you do a documentary, it's a very frustrating process because, especially when you do, like me, a documentary that is theme-driven, debate-driven, and not one character, one subject, one geographic place, one tribe. That's easy. You can do that within. And I did that. I did a movie on shamans in Peru. And that was fairly easy to do because within 6 months we had shot everything we needed between Peru, Santa Fe for a few extra shamans, and it was a very linear construct. So, boom, done in 6 months. But when you do a movie on God or women or femme, it can take centuries, you know, if you want, because, again, it's never totally achieved. So I decided that from now on I will always start with one documentary, but have a second or even a third on the side. This way, when I interview somebody, if somewhat in the conversation, instead of talking about God, we start talking about cars, well, okay, maybe there is a car documentary that can be put together, or a sport documentary. And so this time around, I decided I was going to do something very ambitious, but something that's very dear for me, because that's how I see myself, what I see myself becoming. I was going to do a movie on politics and economics. And it became We the People, a Re-evolution of Economics and Politics. And it was just released before the midterm on November 2nd in the US and Canada, all over the internet, iTunes, Amazon, Vudu, everywhere, on in-demand and so on. And the reason I wanted to do that is, again, you know, as I was afraid of the word God, I've been always a friend all my life of the word politics and economics. And I think most of us are, you know, especially what you are looking at today. Really, what's going on right now in Washington, D.C., is that politics? Is this politics? Is this economic? No, it's gangsterism. It's rape. It's stupidity. It has nothing to do with politics, which means, again, go back to what the words mean. The word politics comes from politis, which means for the people. And the word economics comes from economia, which means the management of the resources of the household. So really, when you look at really probably 99.9% of our so-called politicians, they are not politicians. They are gangsters. And economics, the same. You know, when you look at the economical advisor of the president, these are gangsters as well. They are there to make money on your back. Why do you think they do all these wars? You know, where do all these contracts for weapon and the military industry come from? And where does the money go? You know, follow the money. So, you know, I said, you know what, ultimately, I want to go from being a spiritual humanitarian filmmaker to become a real politician. And the way I'm going to do that is by making a movie about politics and economics. And so I just finished it, and it has a lot of the same people, Deepak Chopra, Michael Beckwith, Sharon Stone, and then also a lot of Nobel Peace laureates like Merit Bagua and Tawakkol Karman, some specialists of economics like Robert Reich. And really, I invite you to watch it because I hope it's going to first reconcile you with the world of politics and economics, and hopefully it's going to make you want also you to run for office. And when I say you to run for office, put your thought into action. It doesn't mean necessarily become the next president in 2 years, even so that would be nice to see who's going to fight that dude in the White House. But it's running for office mean you can run for office in your church, in your school, in your district, in your social club, in your soccer club. Basically, stop being a victim, stop waiting, and be part of the change, you know, because, again, the change is not going to work if you only pray, if you only send to the universe your wishful thoughts. It's going to change because you put all of that in action, and it's all of us. It's 7 billion of us, and the reason is because we are all incredible, limitless creature of intelligence and pure genius. It's just locked. It has just been sometimes castrated, sometimes, you know, masked. But it's there. It's dormant. And you need to wake up and tap into yourself and realize what you're good at. And it can be cooking, it can be car mechanic, it can be surgery, it can be being a priest. I don't care. Just figure it out. Stop being lazy and stop waiting to be saved. You know, we are living through a Messiah era. We are not waiting for the Savior. We are the Savior of each other. So we need to wake up and we need to march and unite together. And that's when things are going to really change. We won't have any war, no more disease, because somebody somewhere has a brilliant idea to eradicate that, to eradicate poverty. Somebody has it. I know it. So just come forward, stop being lazy, and join forces and heal the world in oneness.
Absolutely. Listen, we are still recording. We're no longer streaming, so whoever was in the chat room with us, they can't hear us any longer. But, Emmanuel, I've got a few more questions. Can you stay 5 or 6 minutes more with me?
Absolutely. The entire day until my wife and kids wake up.
Oh, God. That's right. You're 2 hours behind me. Listen, this has been a fascinating conversation, and I've been deliberately muting myself so I don't interrupt you, and you're a fantastic storyteller. I can't even tell you how I'm sitting here in my chair, and I'm leaning forward going, oh, my God, oh, my God. You're a terrific storyteller, and I thank you for being here with me. But what I'd like to know, and I think we did cover promotion and distribution. Was there anything further that you wanted to kind of comment there?
Yes,
and then my
absolutely.
Next question
absolutely.
For you
so, yeah,
what's
yeah,
the
yeah.
next step?
Yes, absolutely. So as I was saying, I just finished 2 documentaries. The second one, by the way, that just was released before Christmas, is called The Cure, Healing the Mind, Healing the Body, Healing the Planet. So it's all about health, nutrition, the environment. And it goes hand in hand with We the People, because, again, I'm very convinced that as long as we don't have healthy politicians in their mind, in their body, in the right environment, we won't have healthy economics and politics. And honestly, look at Trump. I mean, this is chaos, not even walking around. It's chaos crawling around. The guy is a living dead creature. Unhealthy in his mind, unhealthy in his body. Therefore, he cannot act with consciousness, and so I feel compassion for him. Actually, I love Trump. You know, it's maybe horrible for certain people to hear me say that, but no, because I feel pain. I feel his pain. You know, and it's sad. It's sad you reach to that point where you are the president of one of the most powerful country, which is great. It's never been ungreat. So, and you feel compassion. To do what he does, which is nothing, which is chaos. So anyway, that's another debate. But so we just finished 2 documentaries, And it was very hard for me, again, even so we are 10 years after the first time I released the invocation, is that we don't have enough avenues of distribution for so-called spiritual humanitarian documentaries. You know, you still have Gaia, which belongs to NBC Universal, or linked to NBC Universal, it's independent, but they pay peanuts, so it doesn't solve your problem as a distributor. As a filmmaker, you have FMTV, which is a small platform out of Australia. Same thing, they pay a very small advance, so you're kind of screwed. And, oh, I just said the word. And that's it.
It's okay.
So you are left alone. And it's sad that the Netflix, the Hulu, the Amazon, the HBO, the National Geography, don't take a chance on this movie. You know, they are, they are scared. For some reason, they are scared that these movies are so controversial that they're going to scare away the board of directors they are manipulated by, or the consumers from the Midwest who they think are idiots. And therefore that fear,
yeah,
which is unfounded,
there's a problem
by the way.
Right there.
It's unfounded,
yeah,
because I've shown my movie everywhere, all across the world, the countries, to Republican, Democrat, atheist, religious, and everybody loves it. And the reason is because I'm very respectful. I'm constructing a dialogue, a communication, and I never say at the end of the movie, you have to believe this. This is the truth. No, I say these are the truth and the knowledge and the wisdom of all these people. And you are a superior, intelligent person, whoever you are, and therefore you will make your own choice. You will build your own path. You'll find your own life. I don't need to tell you what to do with your life and what to believe. But because of that fear, we don't have distributors who are taking a chance. They are still scared. And so for filmmakers like me, it's really hard. I found this time around a company called Freestyle Digital Media, which took a chance. You know, they didn't give me much money, but enough so I could complete the movie and feed my family for a few months, which is usually much better than what I had before. And they at least took faith, a leap of faith, and they put them all over the internet. And at least now these two movies, plus I gave them the other one that were badly distributed or not distributed at all, like the Invocation. Like I said, Invocation was on Gaia and that was it. Well, now at least all my movies are all over the internet. So at least people can see them and if they choose to see them. But it's sad. We still don't have, and that's one of the next thing I'm going to try to attempt to do, is to create a new distribution company that's really focusing on this edgy, mind-bubbling, so-called controversial spiritual movie, because there are so many of them and so many people who are exploring such and such religion or such and such yoga or Reiki or whatever. And it's great. They are, most of these movies, even when they are preaching, they are great. There's some people out there want to see them. You know, there is always a consumer that he's eager to discover new stuff. So distribution has been a pain. And by the way, because of that, I haven't still achieved any successful, sustainable model, business model. You know, I'm the type of guy that needs to still direct and produce crappy movie on the side and be a journalist and sometimes just a consultant for French distribution company, because my documentaries don't bring back the budget they cost. You know, each movie costs around $150,000 to $200,000, and we barely make 50. So it's a big problem, you know. And then I do, now that it's all over the internet, you'll think, well, you know, people are going to download and stream. Well, they don't, because basically the only way they hear about it is through a radio show like yours or some of the big names like the Sean Stone tweeting or Facebooking. But that's not enough. It will take, again, a Oprah doing a national show. And by the way, I gave it to Oprah, but she totally ignored it. So I don't know. That's another debate and story again about the corporate world. But, you know, that's it. So, yeah, it doesn't mean that because they are out there, that you can monetize your content. And that's sad. But, you know, I'm not stopping. I keep going. I'm doing right now two very interesting documentaries. One is called Guns, Bombs, and War, A Love Story, and it's a deep study about violence and our society at war with itself and each other. And the other one, to go hand in hand with it, it's about relationship. It's called, right now it's just called Sex, but it's going to be, you know, it's going to be my response to the Me Too, and by the way, I approve of it to a certain extent, but really realizing that, again, we have failed because we have failed with our relationship between men and women, and we don't look at each other as men and women. We look at each other as object of consumption for the most part. Obviously, there are decent human beings like you and I, but a lot of people, again, don't have the training, don't have the education, the mindset, and therefore they are acting as idiots with each other, as monsters sometimes as each other. So that's what I keep doing, you know, and eventually, like I said, the reason I did the movie about politics and economics is because you thought I was crazy. Well, I'm even crazier. I decided that eventually I want to be president of France, and so I just said it. And so I'm going to run for the French presidency within 8 to 13 years. The reason 8 to 13 years is that the current president has 3 more years. Either he's going to be reelected or somebody else is going to be elected. I won't be ready in 3 years, so that means 8 years. And if he does a great job, or she does a great job, that means there will be a second term, so that means 13 years. And also, it gives me a chance to learn much more, to understand much more, to connect much more, and to raise my kids, because that's the thing I don't want to sacrifice, is I don't want to sacrifice my family for my job. I think it's stupid. We can have plenty of priorities on the same level, and my job and my family are my two main priorities. And I've got 3 young boys, age 4, 6, and 13. Therefore, I think that within 10 years, or 8 to 13 years, they will be old enough that they can handle a crazy, mad, driven, passionate dad, French bulldog, being president of France, if I get elected. And if I don't, I just become a French drunk, and that's good enough for me.
If I could vote for madame. You, I would. That's incredible. I didn't expect that. I know we've talked a lot about it, a lot of different things. I didn't expect that, and I don't know if this is the first time you've announced that, but thank you for doing
that.
Well,
publicly, yes. I've said it to a few friends, and, you know, again, it won't be announced anywhere but on your show this morning. I'm not putting it anywhere on my social media yet. You know, I'm suggesting something it, but, yeah, that's my thought, being put in ultimate action, and I have to figure out the plan after. You know, it's like everything. It's
right.
Like when I saw the movie about God, and I did it, and it took me 3 years, well, that takes more time, that takes more money. At least, you know, because I'm French, it's A, the only place I can run for president, and B, when you see Trump being elected, or Macron being elected, or even the crazy military nut in Brazil being elected, it's like, you know what? You can be elected. Anybody can be elected. It's all about finding the right connection, the right amount of money, and,
right.
And I think becoming that that very charismatic, convincing, lovable person, and so that takes practice and time. You know, you can't improvise yourself, but I think all of us can do it. You know, because again, it's being of ultimate service for me. It wouldn't be like, you know, like a Trump or whatever, which I think they have a different motive. It's a motive of trying to embellish their bank account. You know, for me, it's not. It's on the contrary, it's totally surrendering myself to everybody. You know, I said my slogan is I, the people, we, president, and I mean it. That means that I feel strongly that hopefully by age, you know, I'm 52, so by age 60 to 65, I will have raised to a certain level of understanding, wisdom, compassion, where I can totally be of service and be used every molecule used to try to help, and that's it, just try to help, and not controlling, not preaching, just as a mediator. That's it, you know, as a bridge of communication between all these fractions that are constantly fighting for the wrong reason and telling them, no, we can find a compromise. There's always a compromise. That's how you stay married, you know. It's never your way or the highway. It's all weird, constructed with a lot of love and patience, you know, freeway. That's it. So we'll see. Yeah,
right.
It's a long plan.
Well,
but it's
wish
doable.
You the best of luck with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and, you know, the message that I'm hearing from you all through this conversation is that we are in control of who we are, ultimately. And that control, those thoughts change from moment to moment, don't they? I mean, you can say, okay,
yeah.
I'm going to set this goal, I'm going to do this, I'm going
yeah.
to do that. But really, we are spiritual beings. There's no doubt in my mind about that. Whether we
yeah.
believe in God, whether we believe in organized religion, it really is your choice, but we are very definitely spiritual creatures. And
yeah,
I have found in my life, and I'm hearing this from you, is that you have to be aware of your thoughts and your emotions, and you need to course correct in the moment when you're veering off the road, so to speak.
Absolutely.
And I think if more people were to be aware of how they're thinking and what they're attracting to themselves and
yeah.
what they're putting out to the world, I think they'd be a lot more cautious.
Yeah, well, that's the problem is that sadly, society, parents, religion is teaching you not to question, not to react, not to think, but just to surrender and be. Again, that's it. They are telling you basically who you are, what you believe, what you should do. And because you do that since age 4, your mind, your brain, your soul is formatted. And it's very, very, very hard for you to free yourself and become what you truly are and what you should truly do. So again, I feel a lot of compassion and really I always try to be helpful to this type of people who are stuck, and there are so many of them, and that's why we have the problem we have today. Everybody is living on their own little island of disconnection, and obviously social medias don't help, nothing helps. The only thing that helps is when we engage in the conversation we are engaged with right now, like you and I. That's it, where we debate and we think and we ponder and we listen to each other and we question and we keep going. And eventually, by the end of the conversation, wow, there is a realization that we have moved forward, that we have grown, that now we are a bit more free and we can do something else with ourselves. So, you know, that's why when people say, so what church do you belong? What is your ritual? What is your meditation? I don't respond. I just open wide my arm, smile, and I say, this is it, and it is all. And that's it, because I don't feel that I should go every Sunday to the same place or every day do that same yoga stretch. I want every day, on the contrary, a new discovery, embrace a new technique, embrace a new faith, and because it's all. God is all and all is God. God is not an old, boring Christian sitting in his cloud looking at us like idiots, you know. It's all. It's all. It's flowing. It's continuing. It's expanding. It's in progress. It's in chaos. It's all of the above. So that's, and of course, it could be seen as scary and maddening, which it is if when you're young, because you don't know how to handle all of that. So I understand why, you know, it's safe and reassuring to, oh, I belong to that group and I'm okay, even though it's just an illusion. But I understand, because you don't have that trust, that faith, that force within to be able to handle the madness of the universe. But eventually, as you are growing older, you should realize, no, you are able, you have all the tools, you have read and studied this or that, and met this person or that person, so now you have more elements to deal with, more tools, more skills, you can bake your own cake, you know, you can make your own recipe, you don't have to follow that recipe, you can create a new thing. And it's fine, you know, again, as long as you realize by common sense that you shouldn't hurt yourself and others, because that's how you become being part of the destructive construct that is kind of more and more sadly the norm. So, yeah, it's
always a work in
progress, but, you know, one baby step at a time, and we're all babies.
Well, isn't that what life is? Baby steps, right?
Baby steps,
you know, the one thing
it.
I do practice every single day, and it's something that I do all day. It's first thing when I wake up, last thing when I finally go to sleep, because sleeping is not really in my wheelhouse. I think a lot of solopreneurs don't sleep well, but the one thing that I continually practice every day without fail is gratitude.
Sure,
without fail.
Sure, of course. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. It's important. It's important to be grateful for what you have, you know. Even so, it's normal to want more because you are more. And there's nothing wrong about it,
right,
as long as you are humble and reasonable with that wanting, with that desire. And so it doesn't turn into an obsession and a jealousy and something self-destructive. So again, it's balance. Balance, 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 balance.
Exactly.
You know, it's tough, you know. We're walking on
the
edge.
It is, because you can get caught
time.
Up in all the garbage.
No, it's...
Well, Emmanuel, thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. It was such a delight talking with you. Let's keep in touch now. Watch my movies.
Definitely.
If you want to be in connection with anybody in the movies, that any speakers, let me know. Or if you want to bring some on your show, let me know. We go from there. We keep
thank
dancing.
You. Listen, before I let you go, and thank you for staying long with me, we've gone about almost 20 minutes long, and I really appreciate that. Where can people find you on the web, and where are the best places to find your movies?
So basically, to find me, and therefore you will find my movies, it's to type my name, Emmanuel, Emmanuel, which by pure irony means God among us, or the messenger of God. And the last name is Itier, Itier, which means in all Hebrew, in me awaken. So now you can understand that insane burden dash destiny that is mine, Emmanuel Itier. So here we are. Just Google my name and you will get to my movies. And obviously you can Google my, you can iTunes my name, you can Amazon my name. It's everywhere. So, and that's how you get to the invocation, Femme, We the People, The Cure, and Shamanic Tracker. Until next time, I see you around somewhere in the universe.
Listen, thank you so much. It has been a huge pleasure speaking with you. And before I let you go, I want to share how I met you, and that's through our mutual friends, Mark Fowler and Barbara Gahn Mueller.
Amazing
souls.
You
know,
and my neighbors.
They are.
Amazing.
So I want to send a big thank you to them.
Absolutely.
Before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us on iTunes and look for Emmanuel in iTunes, and just look for your partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Emmanuel, thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you. I love you all. Take care.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottogovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.